This is Pure Decking, show number 418 for Thursday, December 3rd, 2020. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and recommending alcoholism to my coworkers. I'm Morps. Tonight we have RU. What is up, RU?
Oh, no much, man. Just sitting back, drinking some water, sweating my balls off in a heat wave. As you do.
As you do. So, I may need to get some water throughout the show. I just realized I don't finish off the bourbon. Don't have anything to drink.
I'm going to get yourself a little bit of bourbon right now.
I don't need any more. I've had enough. I, you know, I was joking about my doctor telling me to cut back. Guess what my doctor told me? It's not a joke anymore.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we're all the same, man. You know, the adulthood kicks in and you have to self-regulate. Fuck this self-regulation shit.
It's like, you know, you probably shouldn't drink an entire bottle of bourbon every night, you know? Just
not recommended, but I don't see any warning labels on the bottle. There's no warning labels, right? You can just do whatever you want.
Well, the only warning labels I usually see are warnings if you're pregnant. So I don't have that problem.
Did you get that removed from your health care? Just checking.
I know, tried.
So they're not charging you a little extra.
I tried. So it's not enough. Not an option. It's like I'm not married and not a woman. Why do I need to worry about, you know, child care for birth?
It's 2020, my friend. Those problems don't need to be problems anymore for you to be a pregnant woman. Just say you're one and you are. Eh?
Well, this is going to open up an entire new career in criminal prosecution. Just get women to claim that they're, you know, identify as 17 and... That's not right.
We're already seeing the legal throwbacks of men identifying as women in the prison systems already. And also,
user
too,
was moved to your channel.
Madman, how are you? One who's not looking to transition, but I'm just saying, if you are transitioning from a man to a woman and you're slightly possible, don't commit a crime. It's not going to go well for you in prison. Just saying. Just saying. Don't commit crime. You know, you think they would really cut down on the tranny crime, but no, it doesn't seem to. If anybody's interested, just go and have a look at a little website called Look Who Got Busted and troll through the women's section. They might identify as a woman, but they don't look like one. Hey, man, how are you?
He's trying to sort his audio out and we drag him into the show.
Wait, what? I'm not ready yet. Fuck you.
Well, I mean, it's a bit of a rough conversation to get dragged into as well.
Sorry, like, I used an incorrect...
channel. So, Madman, what's your opinion on trannies committing crime?
I must say I did use the incorrect term there. It's a balloon animal enthusiast, not a tranny. I apologize. I'm about my wrong. Balloon animal enthusiast. If we can get that a hashtag trending on Twitter, that'd be great.
The question is, so many people would have is, where did this come from?
It came from the deluded mind of myself.
There you go. So
that's what happens when the late night crew sits in here to wee hours of the morning, drinking, contemplating the world. Weird shit.
Solve all the world's problems, but unfortunately coming up with things like balloon animal enthusiasts and brining for breast cancer. I mean, it's like...
Well, that and the new superhero character was Superman, but he's paralyzed from the neck down, so he can still slightly fly, but the rest of his body is just like jello. And he's forced to make a living on Las Vegas Strip doing the photos, but he keeps getting molested and picked on by the homeless. I know what you're thinking. He's got lasers super eyes to blast them away, but because he couldn't stop them from putting on the goggles, he was then a party favorite for all the homeless.
Wow.
We wrote that. There's about an hour's worth of story that's been written already.
Well, be careful with that, because DC has gotten really weird in the shit they'll publish. So you guys might be able to get some author credits. I don't know.
DC, go right ahead. I would read that. I want to say on the artist, that's all. I don't want any of their new artists. I want some of the older artists, if I could.
You don't want the artist doing the self-insert, like they're... thing is.
Yeah, I don't want that. I want one of the older, dark DC writers to do that, because I think that's what it would need. Something along the line, if I could have my choice of who picked up the idea for the comic, it'd be Dark Horse Comics, man, if they were still around. I love Dark Horse's work.
Dark Horse would have fucking done that comic, too.
Dude, they've got the best work back in the day.
Granted, by the end of it, they probably would have had him ripping his head off his, you know, paralyzed body and just being a flying head going around lasering things.
Yeah, I know, man. It would have been fantastic. Yeah, you heard it here. It's all copyrighted. It's been written down. Well, we haven't put a patent out on it or anything. But
Nah. You own the copyright as soon as you put it out into the ether. So
we have a fleshed out first story copy of Gelatin Superman. Well, he's not. It's not actually Superman, but
it's somebody with Superman-like abilities.
Like abilities, you know, he was the hero the world needed, but in saving the world, he had a bad accident, and the world just sort of went "fuck you." You know, that's what I was gonna really work in the tall poppy syndrome, the whole human race just shitting all over him after he spent years saving them from.
But what have
themselves.
You done for me lately?
Exactly, dude. It got really dark, but that's generally what happens in TeamSpeak after hours.
You guys wonder why I don't stick around when you guys... It's like, yeah, thanks. I got work and sleep to deal with, so... Anyway.
Yeah, you don't need our diluted alcohol drug-fueled mind coming up with insane ideas.
Well, I might if I'm trying to come up with like a new RPG game or something, but anyways. Oh, I was hoping Madman would be ready for this, but so on YouTube you had a new documentary come out about 3D printed guns, specifically following the guy who founded I keep blanking on the name because they were playing off Defense Distributed. What was it called? Deterrence Dispensed. And so they're on about, you know, 3D printed guns, but unlike fully 3D printed guns, where the idea is like you 3D print everything for the gun just out of plastic, which I know I've talked about before and I maintain is a bad idea. You know, you like they've got the Liberator pistol, which is a single shot 22, and the amount of plastic that goes into one of those barrels that works like once.
Yeah.
No. There's a reason commercial guns haven't gone to all polymer construction. Yeah, they've got polymer frames and they've got plastic parts on them, but the chamber and the barrel is still made of metal. Because the material strength of plastics is not enough to deal with a round going off. It's a bad idea. You have a hand grenade with an incredibly short fuse. But what these guys aren't doing that. What these guys are doing is they are making guns that are a combination of home machining for, although... The rifle that they the main rifle barrel they're espousing is actually made using salt water and electricity, so they're kind of etching the chamber and the rifling into a pipe, which is kind of amazing when you think about it. Yeah, I downloaded the plans for the FGC9 from the group to look at it, and it's legit. They've got a lot of information on building it in there, a lot of videos. I think you'd need to be mechanically minded and you need to take your time. But I could see making one of these things for fun. Now, the guy who founded it lives in, Europe, where apparently buying scary-looking guns is hard. So, he's doing it for political reasons. I'm looking at it just going, that looks neat. But I want to leave the politics out of it. Politics ruins everything. But just the idea of this kind of mix between home machining and using 3D printing to make the electrical etchant so you actually etch rifling into a barrel. So it's interesting, right?
Yeah.
But of course then you get into all the politics of guns and all this other stuff, and I don't know. I feel like you have the right to defend yourself. Anybody who's like, oh no, we're gonna fight, rise up against the government, you're an idiot. If it's you versus the military's gonna win. Sorry. They have more guns and they train with them more, probably. But the idea of an armed populace, I mean, you go into the armed populace being a deterrence against tyranny. It is, but you need a large number of people participating. You need to make the idea of going to war with your citizenry untaste, distasteful versus, the idea that you're actually going to be fighting the military, because that's not going to go well. You might, everybody thinks it's going to be the rebels from Star Wars. No, it's not. You want the idea that the government, you want the government to be scared of the idea in the first place. That's why you want an armed populace. You don't want to actually get in gunfights with the police and the military. That will not end well for anyone. Don't do it. Please.
Yeah, it doesn't work out well for anyone.
Madman, you get your audio sorted.
Yep, I'm in.
Where were you? Did you hear enough of that to join in the conversation? Do I need to start again?
Nope, didn't hear enough of it to do anything.
Fuck. Okay. So on YouTube, there's a documentary that came out about fuck, now I gotta get the name again. I don't mean to get it wrong. It's just, it's instead of Defense Distributed, these guys started the group called Deterrence Distri or Dispensed. And they're putting out plans for a combination of home machining and 3D printing to make your own firearms. And unlike a fully 3D printed gun, which is a bad idea, these things are, you still have a metal barrel, metal chamber. A lot of times they're using a trigger kit, like just replacement parts, like you're going to be working on like an AR or a Glock. They seem to use a lot of Glock parts in their designs. I think that's kind of cool, actually. I think that's all right because the plastic parts aren't really containing they're not really interacting with trying to contain the round and direct it so the bullet goes out the end of the barrel and then, whatever else you're using the recoil for, like working a slide.
Not the barrel or the firing chamber.
Right. You're still using metal for that. And, at least stateside, as long as you're not violating what's the law, the Undetectable Firearms Act, so you have enough metal in there to set off a metal detector, who cares? You can do home gunsmithing as long as you're not selling the things. So I think it's kind of cool. I might experiment a bit with that here. I get a workshop up and going, but the idea of actually like, oh, we're gonna fight the government. No, you're not. You want the government to be scared of the idea of fighting their citizenry because they're armed. You don't want to actually do that fight. So it's not gonna end well for anybody.
It's pretty much means your country's going to be over, but your government's probably overthrown as well.
Yeah,
It's
okay.
just going to suck.
That's still not something anybody really wants to have happen. I
Oh no,
mean,
nobody wants to live in interesting times. We all want to read about them. Possibly
Hey.
watch videos on YouTube from interesting times in other countries.
Man, I've done enough reading about interesting times to know that we're fucking right in the middle of them right now.
Well, I don't want them to get too much. No, I don't want them any more interesting where I live. They can be interesting overseas. They can be interesting down south. I've got enough interesting where I am to be completely satisfied with the level.
Oh, we should war game it out this weekend.
Oh.
See how it'll play.
Home CNC machines are also getting affordable, yeah. Not just the 3D printers. I mean, printing plastic junk is fun, but if you can do a full home CNC machine, you can just make an AR.
You can get cheap ones for $400 to $500 that'll cut like aluminum and maybe low-grade steel. For a couple of grand, you can get a decent one. At least the last time I checked, it's been a bit.
Those low-grade ones, they do billet aluminum?
Yeah, I think so.
Or are they good enough to do billet?
If you run them slow, yeah.
Okay. Like that, I'd be really interested dropping a couple grand if it would do billet.
Like couple grand might even be in the nicer ones. Do steel.
Yeah. Oh, no. Nothing I really need made out of steel. It's all aluminium I want.
Might not be able to get any guns with synthetics, but AK-47?
There's a loophole in my relationship. I can't buy race car parts anymore, but there's nothing about making them myself.
You're going to machine your own heads.
I used to cut my own ports, man. It's not that hard. I can't explain how it's done, but I can show you physically.
Yeah, I know a lot of people do stuff like that.
So, there are designs out there for things called mostly printed CNCs that people have gotten to cut aluminum.
Okay, cool.
So the idea there is you buy like a cheapish 3D printer, print the parts to build a CNC, build the CNC, and what was the guy's name on YouTube? Ivan Minerva? Or I don't know how to say his name. One of them European type names. He did a 3D printed CNC of his own design using aluminum bar stock and 3D printed parts. And when he got it to the point where it would cut metal, he then remade the CNC using the printed one to make all the parts out of metal and remade the whole thing out of metal.
That's cool.
And so he kind of had to bootstrap himself up. But there is a lot of information out there about making your own CNC if you wanted to try that kind of thing. And that I don't know that cool. That would be cheaper than spending a couple of grand on a Chinese CNC mill. But, then it's just how much money and time and space you're willing to put into it. So.
Yeah, no, I'll have a look at that.
Did it list what program he was using for CAD and doing the controls?
It did, but the CAD software was bought by Autodesk, and then Autodesk apparently killed it. So I don't. There's apparently the people who made the software Autodesk wrote have re-released it under another name because they kept some kind of rights to it. But I don't know the details. I'd have to go back Googling. It's been a bit since I dug into this. So, but I don't know. I just, I think it's interesting seeing this idea of buying replacement parts to normal firearms and using it to, between 3D printing and a little bit of light home machining. Because, Madman, the way they're making the chamber and the rifling is they set up a pump with salt water and run electricity through it to etch the rifling in the chamber into a certain size pipe. I downloaded the plans to see what it looked like. So the idea was you would 3D print this framework that you would embed wires in to run the voltage through, and then set up an aquarium pump basically with some tubing, and you make a salt water solution and use that to etch the pipe to make your rifling and your chamber. Which, I mean, it's a very creative way to do it so that you don't have to buy a mill.
There are quite a few of these things out. I just pulled up YouTube, a home CNC. Looks like a lot of it's cheap wood carving, but some of these are doing some decent metal work.
Well, apparently a lot of the cheaper wood carving ones, if you put some work into them, you can get them running much better too. Sort of like where 3D printing was when I first started, where you buy a kit and then, use that to kind of bootstrap making better machines. So, I don't know. I thought it was an interesting topic. At the end of the main documentary, and I'll throw the link in the show notes. Actually, I can throw it in the IRC now. At the end, the guy's like, "This is the scariest person I've ever met," and he's distributing, you know, he's distributing plans so that anybody could make guns. What if ISIS starts making their own guns? It's like, well, is ISIS really ordering a Glock
trigger kit? They
don't
have to.
I mean,
they bought enough off the Obama administration to last a lifetime.
There's that.
They're going to gunsmiths in South America to make guns, or gunsmiths in Afghanistan.
Well, and
no, they're not. They're buying them with the Chinese.
But at the same time, we're sitting here talking about 3D printing and bedroom manufacturing. These guys would actually just go get some Russian tooling and have a mill and somebody who knows how to make it the part, or at least do the work to figure it out, right? It's like, how do you do it? Well, you take one AK-47, you take it to parts, and you have somebody learn to work a fucking lathe.
I would have thought there's enough AKs lying in the sand right now that you don't need to buy them.
Oh, that's probably
a decent tool and die maker can make this.
Yeah.
Like my dad made them.
So
in Minecraft.
That's the funny thing about it, is everybody losing their shit over 3D printed guns, but it's like anybody with a machine shop has been able to do this forever. So anyways, Rat says we're, you know, guys, stop. So I guess it's time to move on. So anyways, I guess we'll get into the news stories here. And oh, before we do move on, bit of station news. We'll probably do a show next week, and then we'll probably go on hiatus through the end of the year. It's already hard to find relevant stuff to talk about that's not election news or the woo flu. So definitely a non-hacker thinking, what'd Rat say here? Rat says, this is definitely a non-hacker thinking thing where they think of how it's supposed to work versus how it actually works. A good distinction to keep in mind. Hacker's a mindset, not specific to security. That's true. That's just, you know, the old school meaning of hacker absolutely was, what can I do to make it work? As opposed to, you know, breaking into computers. But, of course, they found a term and ran with it. So, but, anyways, first article I have for tonight, you guys be watching. Yeah, I might watch the Chaos Computer Conference. We'll see. I usually go check them out on YouTube after the fact.
Think Iron Geek will be throwing up any of the conference?
He might. He usually. I don't know that he. Chaos Computer Club's usually in Germany, so I don't know that he'd be making it over for that. What was Gil's speech? Oh God, there's a reference. There's a reference. Yeah, hackers penetrate computer systems, banks, and utility control. I don't remember the rest of it. Fuck it. Ugh, hard copy. Anyways. I haven't watched that movie again recently. I need to bring that up and rewatch it. I need to do the usual year-end stuff. Hackers, Fight Club. I had a whole list of movies I'm supposed to, you know, rewatch on a regular basis.
Die Hard. It's not Christmas till you watch Die Hard.
Yeah.
Lethal Weapon 1.
Okay. Aliens.
Spaceballs.
Yeah. Yeah, we did Spaceballs a couple weeks ago.
Johnny Mnemonic. Ghost in the Shell, the original one.
Did that a week ago.
Yeah.
Did you guys do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you watch it together?
Yeah,
we started it quite a lot.
I called it a night because I had work in the morning, and then, but yeah, that's right, because I thought the audio was messed up for there for a bit.
Oh, 300.
300.
That's made it into the queue.
That's another good one.
Yeah.
Let's see.
If anyone wants to see Macaulay Culkin kill somebody, The Good Son.
Or neo-Nazi Harry Potter.
Do you think you can fly? No, DP View, I'm not watching Mean Girls.
That's just piqued my curiosity.
What, Mean Girls?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's, I know what it is. I'm just like, that one's not on the list of things you need to rewatch on a regular basis.
No, it's just a streaming channel I watch all the time. When people want to be dicks in the channel, they fucking queue up Mean Girls. I'm just wondering if we're browsing some of the same pirate sites, that's all.
All right. First article is from the MorganHillTimes.com. A grand jury has issued a pair of indictments accusing Apple's head of global security and two high-ranking officials from the Santa Clara County Sheriff's Office and a local business owner of exchanging bribes for concealed gun permits. At a press conference today, District Attorney Jeff Rosen announced the charges against Apple's Chief Security Officer Thomas Moyer, insurance broker Harpreet Chandra, and Undersheriff Rick Sung and Captain James Jensen. Sung, second in rank only to Sheriff Lori Smith in the Sheriff's Office, is accused of deliberately holding back four concealed carry weapons permits for Apple's security team until the Cupertino-based corporation agreed to donate 200 iPads worth about $75,000 to the Sheriff's Office, Rosen said. Sung and Jensen allegedly worked together to solicit the exchange of concealed carry permits for the tech donation from Apple. The donation was pulled back at the 11th hour when our search warrants into this probe began in August 2019, Rosen said Monday. In another incident, Sung extracted a promise from Chandra for $6,000 worth of luxury box suites at a San Jose Sharks game on Valentine's Day in 2019 before the issuing Chandra a concealed carry weapons permit, Rosen said. Sheriff Lori Smith's family members and some of her biggest supporters held a celebration for her reelection and as sheriff in Chandra's suite, Rosen said. In a written statement, Rosen said, Swung and Jensen treated concealed carry weapon licenses as commodities and found willing buyers. Bribe seekers should be reported to the district attorney's office, not rewarded with compliance, he admonished. Moyer, Chandra, and other defendants should not have accepted the offered bribes, but should have reported Sung and Jensen to the DA's office, Rosen added. Attorneys for Moyer and Chandra maintained their client's innocence, saying they were collateral damage in an ongoing political rivalry between Rosen and Sheriff Smith. Tom Moyer is innocent of the charges filed against him, his attorney Ed Swanson said. He did nothing wrong and he acted okay, blah, 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 blah. So pretty much, the sheriff's office was demanding bribes to get concealed carry permits, and Apple was playing ball. And so, of course, the headline is, everybody's going, oh, Apple's chief of security is indicted in, a concealed carry case in Santa Clara. It's like, yeah, but it's because the sheriff's... They were basically operating like a third world country, demanding bribes to get anything done.
And this one, I kind of see Apple as a victim here.
Yeah.
I mean, they might be powerful enough that they could have actually gone to a prosecutor and gotten something done, but most people can't. So I can see playing ball.
I mean, because what, the sheriff's highest up when it comes to authority there. Who do you go to, a district judge?
A district attorney. And they would have to pull in...
The FBI.
The Justice Department or the FBI.
Well, the problem is it's California, right? So getting concealed carry shit is already hard in California. Now, when you're talking about a company's chief of security, they're wanting concealed carry permits for the, basically for their physical security in the offices, right? Makes sense. They want people with guns to actually protect the offices.
But isn't Apple a gun-free zone?
I'm sure they say something like that. Nobody who believes that actually is.
Gun-free zones means the generic employee can't carry.
Being
but if
facetious.
They have licensed security, they can. Oh, yeah.
I'm just making fun of California.
I had that conversation at work because they do have some of our facilities have, you know, physical security carrying weapons. And I asked them, so what's the deal with that? And they're like, well, unless you're on certain teams, of course, you know, firearms and weapons are prohibited in the buildings. But on those certain, it's like, but I'm on the security team. Because, yeah, no. Actually, first they said, well, do you have your concealed carry? I'm like, well, yeah. Like, sorry, no. Because at first they were going to try to shut me down with that. It's like, yeah, I've got my concealed carry. You want to see it? No, they wouldn't do it.
They need to set up DVD rentals.
Say what?
I used to set up DVD rentals. Oh, yeah. Concealed carry. The only time I've ever gotten a show is to a clerk. Cops don't ask me for it.
Yeah, I have yet to actually have to give it to a cop. But
that's lucky.
Yeah.
No, it's just not being stupid. I learned from a friend of mine
not to be stupid
in a no stupid zone.
Yeah. For anybody wondering, give us the definition of a no stupid zone.
A no stupid zone is anywhere a cop can see you.
I'm pretty sure I've been regaled with a few stories of madmen breaching that order of being stupid.
Cops didn't see me. I have been stupid, but not in a no stupid zone. I have been stupid unknowingly. I've accidentally pissed on some graves. It kind of sucks, but I needed to go, and I didn't read the historical placard.
Oh, God. I'm sorry I walked into that.
Well, if Morph wasn't busy ingressing, he could have told me to stop.
It's like, Madman, you realize this is a Civil War memorial, right? What?
You're not making it better. Dig up. God, fucking war veterans. I was thinking just some poor little old ladies fucking... No, it's war veterans. Of course it had to be fucking war veterans.
For all we know, they were the Confederacy.
It doesn't make it any better. Just
no, Madman, we actually know that it wasn't just the Confederacy because it was a battlefield.
Oh. And next hate crime.
Same lines. I mean, I didn't measuring distance which way. It could have all been Confederate soldiers.
Yeah, well, I mean, it could have been worse. He could have been up there spinning, so.
All right, on to the next hate crime.
All right. Google illegally spied on and retaliated against workers. This one's from Ars
There's
Technica.
A surprise. Yeah. Is it a James Damore all over again? Is that what's happening?
It's right up there.
All right.
Google's actions amid workplace organizing efforts, including the high-profile firings of several employees, were illegal violations of the National Labor Relations Act, federal regulators said this week. The National Labor Relations Board filed a formal complaint against Google Wednesday, alleging that the company has been interfering with, restraining, or coercing employees to interfere with their protected concerned activity, workplace organization rights that are protected by law. Let's see. Google fired several different workers late last year and made different efforts to organize company employees. For former employees who were let go last November, Lawrence Perland, Paul Duke, Rebecca Rivers, and Sophie Waldman filed complaints with the NLRB almost exactly a year ago, alleging that Google's draconian, pernicious, and unlawful conduct was an unlawful attempt to prevent workplace organizing. A few weeks later, another former Google employee, Catherine Spires, was fired after she developed a tool for the company's internal build of Chrome that notified Google workers of their legal right to organize.
Just poke the bear. Well played.
Yeah, you know, this is going right into the version of Chrome that goes out to everybody's workstations. By the way, kicked a hornet's nest is what that is. Spires, too, filed a complaint with the NLRB, claiming that Google's retaliation against her was unlawful. I don't know, putting a notice on the internal build of Chrome that everyone has the right to organize, it kind of seems like... Well, it kind of seems like dropping your pants and mooning the bar, I'm just going to say. I mean.
My view on it is, if they're attempting to organize outside of work hours and off Google property, Google has no right to say what you do when you're not at work. But if I'm paying you, I'm not paying you to do what you want. I'm paying you to do what I want. So in my time, you fix bugs and you sell shit. You want to organize, organize on your time.
Fair enough.
Let's see. Google alleged that Rivers, Berlin, and others were filed for, quote, intentional and often repeated violations of our longstanding data security policies, unquote. According to the NLRB's filing, however, Google put several of the rules of the employees allegedly violated in place in response to the employee organizing efforts, and those rules were designed to discourage employees from joining, or assisting a union. The company also unlawfully surveilled employees' protected activities by viewing employees an employee's slide deck in support of a union drive, as well as by interrogating employees about protected activities. Quote, Google's hiring of IRI is an unambiguous declaration that the management will no longer tolerate worker organizing, unquote, Berlin said in a statement, referring to Google bringing on the infamous union-busting firm as consultants in late 2019. Quote, management and their union-busting cronies wanted to send that message, and the NLRB is now sending their own message, worker organizing is protected by law, unquote. Google issued a statement supporting its actions against, again, placing blame squarely on the former employees. Google has always worked to support a culture of internal discussion, and we place immense trust in our employees. Employees have protected
that
their
one
rights.
I'll call bullshit on.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Confident in our decision and legal position, i.e. we have enough money to pay our lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of process, NLRB's complaints are somewhat similar to either a lawsuit, to either a lawsuit in civil court or an indictment in criminal court. From here, Google and the regulator either settle the case or it goes to an in-house trial before one of the NLRB's administrative law judges. The complaint set a hearing date for April 12th of next year, either in person or by video conference, if there is no settlement reached by that time. There'll be a settlement. Google's going to give them the nuisance money and make it go away. Because, again, it's worth it to Google to not have to deal with a union.
Well,
I'm not
the nuisance
particularly
money
big...
doesn't stop them from continuing to organize.
Yeah. I'm not a particularly big fan of unions, but I'm trying to think if there's an argument that Google's employees need it or not, because I'm not sure how Google is abusing its employees. Now, I know they have a culture of people, you know, basically living in the offices and, you know, working, you know, as many hours as they can in the day, and I know you get kind of docked if you don't do that, but
aren't you compensated extremely well?
Yeah, they pay their people a lot, and you know, free food and all that stuff. So
yeah,
I kind of figure I like it's not an unknown quantity. You know what you're in for if you take a job at Google, right?
Yeah.
Well, but
just because you know what you're in for doesn't mean that you shouldn't be able to change the practices if they're crap.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Because people working in coal mines knew what they were in for when they went down there. Doesn't mean you don't want better respirators if you can get them.
Yeah, but this isn't coal mines. This is typing at a keyboard, you know?
It's typing at a keyboard and also monitoring images that are posted. You got to think what all Google employees do. There's somebody making sure child porn's not on YouTube.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. I don't know.
They're doing a shit-ass job of it.
Oh, I'm not going to say they're doing a great job, but that might be due to understaffing. Though one person's getting to see more of that shit, some unions push for more employees to do those stressful jobs.
Tensions between Google and its workers have been running high for several years. In 2018, thousands of employees staged a walkout to protest Google's handling of sexual harassment allegations against senior executives. Two employees who helped organize the 2018 mass walkout, Meredith Whittaker and Claire Stapleton, said in 2019 they were facing retaliation from their employer. Both left the company that summer. Neither is this Google's first tangle with the NLRB. In 2019, the company and the regulator reached a settlement after a previous complaint. That settlement required Google to explain to employees that the rights they have under federal labor law and to tell employees they would not be retaliated against for exercising those rights. So,
again, sexual harassment, we've got enough laws on that when you don't need a union, you just need a lawyer.
Yeah, and again, the thing is, you got to look at this from a company like Google's perspective. They have a stupid amount of money. For them, it's probably worth occasionally just paying off the NLRB with settlements and making token gestures to not have to deal with the union.
Ooh. Do you think they could actually fight this long enough to get into an actual Article 3 court? Because one problem I have with the National Labor Relations Board isn't exactly what they do, but they're in charge of prosecuting you and trying you, and that's fucked up.
Yeah.
They should go before a neutral judge, and that neutral judge should make the call.
Well, again, the people making that decision are going to be making the decision based on financials. I don't see them fighting it that long. I see them just coming up with another settlement.
Yeah. But it would be cool if Google decided, we're going to do not evil, and we're going to overturn the administrative court system and just have people go before judges again so that the little man doesn't get screwed.
You know,
which
I'm sure
Google's not going to do that because they like the little man getting screwed.
Exactly.
I'm sure somebody at Google is deeply regretting the don't be evil tagline that got attached to their company. Because the moment you had to know the moment you violated that it was just going to be thrown in your face.
And the moment you removed it, you're like, why would you remove that? Who wants to be evil? That was a lose-lose with that one.
Yeah, somebody wasn't thinking. This next one's kind of sad. So this is from AP News. The giant radio telescope in Puerto Rico has collapsed.
Oh, SETI's dead? I mean, I know they have other sites that they
use big
for
one,
that.
That giant one? Yeah. The one
but
with the dish is
basically
on the surface.
But I always think of SETI when I think of that. Yeah.
A huge, already damaged radio telescope in Puerto Rico that has played a key role in astronomical discoveries for more than half a century completely collapsed on Tuesday. The telescope's 900-ton receiver platform and the Grecian Dome, a structure as tall as a four-story building that houses secondary reflectors, fell into the northern portion of the vast reflector dish more than 400 feet below. The U.S. National Science Foundation had earlier announced that it would close the radio telescope. An auxiliary cable snapped in August, causing a 100-foot gash in the 1,000-foot-wide dish and damaged the receiver platform that hung above it. Then a main cable broke in early November. The collapse stunned many scientists who had relied on what was until recently the largest radio telescope in the world. Quote, it sounded like a rumble. I knew exactly what it was, said Jonathan Friedman, who worked for 26 years as a senior research associate at the observatory and still lives near it. Quote, I was screaming. Personally, I was out of control. I don't have words to express it. It's a very deep, terrible feeling, unquote. Friedman ran up a hill near his home and confirmed his suspicions. A cloud of dust hung in the air where the structure once stood, a demolishing hopes held by some scientists that the telescope could be somehow repaired. The collapse at 7:56 a.m. on Tuesday wasn't a surprise because many wires in the thick cables holding the structure snapped over the weekend. Angel Vasquez, the telescope's director of operations, told the Associated Press. It was a snowball effect, he said. There was no way to stop it. It was too much for the old girl to take. He said there was an extremely difficult to say whether anything could have been done to prevent the damage that occurred after the first cable snapped in August. The maintenance was kept up as best we could, he said. The National Science Foundation did the best they could with what they have. However, the observatory director, Francisco Cordova, said that while the NSF decided it was too risky to repair the damaged cables before Tuesday's collapse, he believed there had been options, such as relieving tension in certain cables or using helicopters to help redistribute weight. Meanwhile, installing a new telescope would cost up to $350 million, money the NSF doesn't have, Vasquez said, adding it would have to come from U.S. Congress. It's a huge loss, said Carmen Pantamoja, I'm not sure how to say that name, an astronomer and professor at the University of Puerto Rico who used the telescope for her doctorate. It was a chapter of my life. Scientists worldwide had been petitioning U.S. officials and others to reverse the NSF decisions to close the observatory. The NSF said at the time that it was intended to eventually reopen the visitor center and restore operations at the observatory's remaining assets, including its two LIDAR facilities used for upper atmospheric and ionic research, including analyzing cloud cover and precipitation data. The LIDAR facilities are still operational, along with a 12-meter telescope and a photometer used to study photons in the atmosphere, Vasquez said. We are saddened by the situation, but thankful that no one was hurt. NSF Director, that's a name, Sethuman Panthimanchan said in a statement, when engineers advised NFS that the structure was unstable and presented a danger to work teams and Arcebeo staff, we took their warning seriously. The telescope was built in the 1960s with money from the Defense Department and amid a push to develop anti-ballistic missile defenses. It had endured hurricanes, tropical humidity, and a recent string of earthquakes in its 57 years of operation. The telescope had been used to track asteroids on a path to Earth, conduct research that led to a Nobel Prize, and determine if a planet had its if a planet is potentially habitable. It also served as a training ground for graduate students and grew around 90,000 visitors a year. Quote, I am one of those students who visited it when young and got inspired, unquote, said Abel Mendez, a physics and astrobiology professor at the University of Puerto Rico at Arcebeo, who had used the telescope for the research. The world without the observatory loses, but Puerto Rico loses even more. He last used the telescope on August 6th, just days before a socket holding the auxiliary cable that snapped failed in what experts believe could have been a manufacturing error. The National Science Foundation, which owns the observatory that is managed by the University of Central Florida, said crews who evaluated the structure after the first incident determined that the remaining cables could handle the additional weight. But on November 6th, another cable broke. Scientists had used the telescope to study pulsars and detect gravitational waves as well as search for neutral hydrogen, which can reveal how certain cosmic structures are formed. About 250 scientists worldwide had been using the observatory when it closed in August, including Menez, who had been studying stars to detect habitable planets. And the picture of this thing is pretty sad because you can see the giant hole in it. And, you know, I remember seeing this thing in documentaries and all the work that had gone into it. And it's, I mean, it's just kind of sad to see that they've just kind of let it get that far gone, you know?
It was used in GoldenEye as a prop.
Yeah, you're right, it was.
Final fight scene on that. Yeah, it's sad. I think they just raised a shit ton of money for it, too, to repair it.
Oh, I'm sure it'll get enough attention.
Yeah, they'll rebuild it. Better technology now, so it'll be a better system.
I mean, maybe fixing that would be one of the better outcomes if they do decide to make Puerto Rico a state. So.
God, I forgot about that.
Yeah, that's one of the things they're saying that they want to do to the theory was that they would try to make Puerto Rico and D.C. states to get more senators in, and because they expected them to be of one particular political party. So,
I can't think of a good reason off the top of my head why Puerto Rico shouldn't be. D.C. should never be a state. They can go back to being part of, what is it, Maryland and Virginia?
Yeah.
But Puerto Rico, they meet the qualifications, let them vote on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have the population requirement down.
Although I don't know if that's going to help them rebuild their telescope.
Well, it'd get attention.
I do believe some of the hurricane relief funds may have been meant for that and ended up somewhere else. I'm not going to say in the governor's mansion, back pocket, or line of coke, but those are options. Yeah, that thing survived how many hurricanes? It's got to be a few dozen. It's built in the 60s.
Yeah. That thing had been around for a long time.
Yep.
So it's sad. I do hope they fix it. But
I'm not sure exactly how outdated it would be, because the electronics, that's all modular. They've been upgrading that.
Yeah.
So it's just the big dish.
The dish itself wouldn't be outdated at all, because I mean that's just a piece of equipment. Yeah, you're right. They'd been switching out the electronics. You could update those. They were feeding the data out to all kinds of people. I mean, and largely, you wouldn't even be processing a lot of that data. It would just be a raw feed. Here's everything we're getting. And then they'd let the individual researchers parse and cut up what they wanted, as long as it's in some kind of a usable format. So
I wonder, with all the endowments a lot of our universities have, if any of them will cough up some cash.
Hell no.
You know how many billions of dollars Yale is sitting on?
I know what they're worth, yes. The institution, they need to be torn down.
Pass out a hat. Everybody toss in a million. We'll rebuild the telescope and then have access to the data again.
They haven't looked outward in 50 years, madman. They don't care.
Well, that's under the University of Florida. How big are their endowments?
Not as big as Yale's.
How big are the stadiums they have for football? Sorry, we can't compensate those players even though we make billions off them. That's a whole different rant. Moving on.
Next article is from Ars Technica. Earlier this year, Apple patched one of the most breathtaking iPhone vulnerabilities ever. A memory corruption bug in the iOS kernel gave attackers remote access to the entire device over Wi-Fi with no user interaction required at all. And it was wormable, meaning radio proximity exploits could spread from one nearby device to another, once again with no user interaction needed. This thing could have spread like a fucking virus.
Wow.
No need to open up a file. No need to be in a certain program. It's just I walk past the sick iPhone, and mine gets the shiv.
Yep. The Wi-Fi packet of death was devised by Ann Beer, a researcher at Project Zero, Google's vulnerability research arm. In a 30,000 word post published Tuesday afternoon, Beer described the vulnerability and the proof of concept exploit he spent 6 months developing single-handedly. Almost immediately, fellow security researchers took notice. Yes, I would say.
I've decided I'm going to kill our competitor's main product. This is how I figured out how to do it.
This is a fantastic piece of work, Chris Evans, a semi-retired security researcher and executive at the founder of Project Zero, said in an interview. This is really pretty serious. The fact that you don't really have to really interact with your phone for this to be set off is really quite scary. This attack is just you walking along, your phone's in your pocket, and over Wi-Fi, somebody worms in with dodgy Wi-Fi packets. Beer's attack worked by exploiting a buffer overflow bug in the driver for AWDL, an Apple proprietary mesh networking protocol that makes things like AirDrop work. Because drivers reside in the kernel, one of the most privileged parts of the operating system, the AWDL flaw... Okay, the kernel is the main loop, if for anybody wondering. Programs generally work in loops, and the main loop is the big one at the core of your program. So the kernel is like the program that's launching everything else in your operating system, to greatly oversimplify it, but just to kind of explain. So when they say the driver resides in the kernel, what that means is that it's part of the main process that's running in your operating system. And most hardware drivers are, because the big thing the operating system does is it translates the upper layer API calls down to things the hardware understands. So just a little bit of OS 101 there, if anybody wasn't sure. But that means that there's very little opportunity for something to detect that something's wrong with the packet if there's a flaw in a driver. And the AWDL flaw had the serious potential for hacks. Because AWDL parses Wi-Fi packets, exploits can be transmitted over the air with no indication that anything is amiss. Right, so this was a vulnerability at the driver level before, you know, at the part that evaluates whether the packet is even evaluated whether or not that you should be listening to it. because if it's not part of a network you join to, your system will discard it. Now, they're going to receive it anyways, because that's how radio works. You don't really get to choose what you receive, but your OS would discard it going, oh, that's not mine. I don't care about it. So the exploit was targeting a buffer overflow before the packet was even determined whether or not your machine should process it. So that's how low level this was. Imagine the sense of power an attacker with such a capability must feel, Beer wrote. As we all pour more and more of our social souls into these devices, an attacker can gain a treasure trove of information on an unsuspecting target. Beer develops several different exploits. The most advanced ones installs an implant that has full access to the user's personal data, including emails, photos, messages, and passwords, and some of the crypto keys stored on the keychain. Attack uses a laptop, a Raspberry Pi, and some off-the-shelf Wi-Fi adapters. It takes about 2 minutes to install the prototype implant, but Beer said that with more work, a better exploit could deliver it in a handful of seconds. So in other words, he wasn't trying to make it better. He was just trying to prove that it worked.
Yeah, proof of concept.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, we could have made this better. I just didn't see the need to. Exploits only work on devices that are within Wi-Fi range of the attacker. I love the picture he's got there. It's a netbook with all this crap gun taped to the back of it.
So anyone that doesn't turn their Wi-Fi off, it's vulnerable to this.
And Apple's already fixed it, but yeah. He wouldn't publish the write-up until Apple fixed it. I think I have that same battery pack that he's got on the back of his laptop, by the way. It's a good one, just in case anybody's wondering. I mean, Beer developed several different exploits. Okay, I already read this. Video is the exploit in action, so there's actually video showing it working. Beer said that Apple fixed the vulnerability before the launch of the COVID-19 contact tracing interfaces put into iOS 13.5 in May. The researcher said he has no evidence the vulnerability was ever exploited in the wild, although he noted at least one exploit seller was aware of the bug in May, 7 months before today's disclosure. Apple figures show that the vast majority of iPhones and iPads are updated regularly. The beauty and impressiveness of the hack is that it relied on a single bug to wirelessly access secrets locked away in what's arguably the world's most hardened and secure consumer device. Add. So, yeah. They go on talking about how wonderful iPhones are. But, yeah. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, that's up there with MS-08 67. It's just like, wow. You know?
Think Apple gave him any money?
No, because he works for Google. So, most likely they gave it to Apple for free of, like, fix your shit. And probably with a disclosure deadline. As in, I'm going to disclose this, you know, 6 months, 9 months after disclosure if you don't work with me. That's usually how that works, is if you're going to a company directly. It's like, I found this bug. What are you guys going to do about it? By the way, I plan on publishing my paper in 3 months if I don't hear from you guys. That's usually how that goes. It's been a debate going around in a lot of the security circles of, do you have, you know, total open disclosure where the moment you find something, you write it up and you throw it out on Medium? Do you do responsible disclosure where you work with the company and give them a set amount of time and then disclose anyways? Or do you totally let the company own the process, send them the exploit, and never disclose it, right?
And I'd go with the middle one.
Well, that's the one that most people advocate for, is the, quote, responsible disclosure. The idea being that if a company doesn't care enough to even respond to you, they're not going to care. You know, they might get upset when you publish the exploit, but you tried, right?
Well, it forces them to fix it, or at least acknowledge it, and then you know to buy new shit.
Right. You know, total disclosure, or complete open disclosure, is an interesting, you know, absolutist point of view of, I found something, people need to know about it, because if you find it out in the wild today, you know, the quicker people know about it, the quicker it gets fixed. But I get,
or script kiddies can take advantage of it, and it takes a bit to actually fix that, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah,
they're not going to have the fix immediately.
Well, and again, a lot of these arguments are based around the idea of Windows networks, where a lot of times you could mitigate by blocking a port or uninstalling a service or doing a reg key hack. And so the idea was to get people mitigating it as soon as possible, because if the researcher found it, somebody else could find it too. or may even already have it. Whereas responsible disclosure is the idea of I'm going to, you know, at least work with the company and try to get them to, you know, work with me, and I'll set some deadlines, and, you know, if they come back and say they need more time, I'll, you know, try to be reasonable with them, that kind of thing. But that one has the problem of backfiring where you know, when companies get litigious. So then you have the no disclosure of just where you give it to the company and hope for the best. That one's generally frowned upon because most companies won't fix it if they think nobody else will find it and they don't want to deal with it. So I don't know. It's you know, there's lots of different arguments about the best way to handle it, but
I could see an argument for the immediately disclosing it if it's something the user could do to stop from being hacked. Like with this iPhone one, turn off your Wi-Fi. It sucks, but you can live without it. There are other bugs that the quick fix might not be that simple. And you got to think, how many people are you putting at risk by throwing out the bug if the average consumer can't do anything about it?
Well, and that's one of the long-term arguments, but trying to go the responsible disclosure route doesn't always work because you will have companies say, oh, we're working on it. Can you give us a few more months? Oh, we know we said we needed a few more months. We need another few more months. And finally, you start going, are they ever going to fix this or not? Right? So.
Well, that's just when you have your hard deadline. It's like, yeah, you can keep working on it. Everyone's going to know about it now, and they'll mitigate as they see fit.
And usually when you say that kind of thing, they'll say, well, if you disclose, we're going to send the lawyers after you. So, you know, is it right? No, it's not. But you occasionally see, you know, where, well, so somebody was going to give a talk at a conference and they backed out at the last minute. Usually that's because somebody threatened them with a lawsuit.
Oh, wow. This paper that I have no idea who wrote ended up on GitHub.
That happens too. So, where they just, you know, disclose it anyways under a nom de plume and be like, yeah, I don't know. Somebody else must have been doing parallel research. You know.
I mean, you do have a very popular product, you know, iPhones and all. I wonder how many people were attempting to break into your shit.
So, I don't know. I mean, it seems like this guy waited a good long time after Apple patched it before he published it. I mean, if they fixed it in May and he's just now publishing it, that's a 6 months after the fact, you know, really wanting to make sure that patch got applied before he published it. So,
well, that's Google will scratch Apple's back if Apple will scratch Google's back.
Well, the funny thing is, for as much, you know, as much enmity as, you know, must exist between those two, I'm certain their technicians all sit down and work, okay, we can do this, we can fix that, we can, you know that's what happens. The technicians don't give a fuck about us versus them. They're just trying to solve problems. So, you know that all that enmity is up at the business level and the lawyers and the managers and shit like that. You know, the guys doing the work, they're like, they got an API, we can use it, you know. So, and although the difference there is, I'm certain that if Google had published this before giving Apple a chance to fix it, you know, Apple would have been throwing lawsuits around. So, justified or not. Let's see. This story's stupid, and we're at the hour, so I'm going to skip that. One last story. RU sent me this one earlier in the week, and we talked about it because of just how dumb it was.
It relates to last week's story.
It's from the BBC. And ditch high definition and new technology to fight climate change.
One less email a week, kids, and we can change the planet's weather.
I'll send that snail mail. Thank you.
HD video streaming on a phone generates about 8 times more emissions than standard definitions, a report from the UK's Royal Society says. 8 times more. How are they?
I don't know, man. It's pure propaganda and bullshit.
And on the small screen, the viewer might not even notice the difference. Platforms and regulators should limit streaming resolution to the standard SD, the authors urged. The report says that digital technology's estimated contribution to global emissions ranges from 1.4% to 5.9% of the global total. Another simple way to save energy is for people streaming music to turn off any accompanying video if they're just listening, not watching, the authors say. They estimate such small moves could save up to 5% of the emissions of a streaming service. A reduction comparable to what's achieved by running YouTube servers on renewable energy. Why do you send me this shit?
Because this is going to be the tyranny of what's good for you. We're going to take shit away from you because it's good for you. That's what we're looking at now. This is be the new how it's done. No, this is good for you. This is good for you. That's why we're doing it. No, don't complain. It's good for you at the end of the day. That's what it's going to come down to, man.
The report also, 'cause
you're going to have the people go, no, they have to do it because it's good for the planet. It's good for us. It's good for you.
Well, that's
how they'll rally everybody.
That's going to be the next thing. It's like, well, we did all these lockdowns for COVID, and well, why can't we do that for climate change? And,
well, we're already seeing it with the tyranny of the mask.
Yeah.
Wear the mask because it's good for you and it's good for the next person. And that's how they divide you. Because it's the tyranny of what's good for you.
The report also suggests owning and using devices for longer before trading them in because the emissions in making a new device are significant. Okay, that one might actually matter because the metals and the lithium and the other chemicals in making devices. I agree with you on that one. But the
Didn't Apple just pay a fine for fucking up people's phones deliberately?
No, so they advertised that they were waterproof when they didn't.
Oh, really. Okay.
They weren't really as waterproof as they advertised, so they had paid like $12 million for false advertising or something like that. Some of the numbers in the report are contested, but it says that if you change your mobile phone every 2 years, the manufacturing represents about half of all the emissions it will generate through its lifetime. Your phone doesn't generate emissions. The electricity from the coal plant that powers your phone generates the emissions. Come on, people. I don't know.
You don't use your phone in a confined indoor space. The emissions may kill you.
For fuck's sake. Well, I mean, it's okay. When you're taking it to this level and you're not explaining that, you're gonna get people who's like, well, I can't have my phone in the bathroom. The emissions might kill me. I mean, for fuck's sake.
You didn't know that? Man, you're playing Russian roulette with your life, taking your phone to the toilet. The emissions coming from that phone will kill you.
It's not the emissions I'm worried about. It's the extension cord going into the bathtub.
So how many phones and a train car does it take to scramble an egg?
Yeah, 3 or 4. The radiation of 6 will make you sterile. And the emissions of 12 will kill you. But dude, I'm going with this emissions of the phone now.
Let's see, if individuals keep their phones for 4 years instead of 2, that contribution, okay, yes, that would be true, because then the manufacturing of the phones actually is a thing. For the same reason, the report says buying a device secondhand or sharing equipment also reduces the so-called, blah, 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 blah. Moving computing from home or business desktops to the cloud can also help, because the cloud allows more energy efficient patterns of server use so they don't consume energy while idle. I would argue with you on that one.
Aren't the servers always there so I can talk to them?
Yes. Assuming your internet's working, assuming the server's not down, assuming it hasn't been hacked, and assuming that that company's not deciding to be shitty and make you, change plans this year to keep access to your stuff.
Yeah, I was just thinking, when I want to play, Overwatch, they don't just start up a server for me. I'm connecting to something that's already on.
Get ready to see more of these stories, man. This is the beginning.
So, okay, it's all down to energy consumption. But when they're talking about, oh, watching things in high definition, what they're doing is they're looking at how much energy a server uses to transmit SD video versus HD video, and then trying to say that we'll use less. But the thing is, that's not how any of this works. Yes, servers, when they're idle, will spin down and use less energy. That is a thing that happens. Like you see it in your laptop when it's got these reduced speed modes to conserve battery life and things like that. I mean, yeah, that's a thing. But first and foremost, on almost every server that's ran, they turn the energy management off because it causes more problems than it's worth. So I'm just going to throw that one out there right now. Most of the people running these servers turn that kind of energy management off. Secondly, most of these servers are running virtualization software or containerization software, so they're already highly leveraged, so they're almost never going into an idle state. So you're not really saving anything. It's all hypothetical math. It's where somebody sat there with a kilowatt and did some readings on a server based on workload, and then did more back of the napkin Excel or whatever to come up with their numbers. And then they're like, oh, look, if everybody watched in SD, well, you know what? If we made everybody go back to the web page design of the 90s, we could run the internet on much less hardware. And yeah, you'd see less carbon emissions, but nobody's going to do it. Like, why don't we just ban JavaScript? You know what? I'm all for this now. I'm all for this. Ban JavaScript to save the planet. I'm down. Do you know how much bandwidth JavaScript wastes?
I have no idea.
There's like 25 to 50 megs of JavaScript per page load on any average website these days for like your news pages and stuff like that.
Damn.
I mean, yeah. That's running the batteries down. That's wasting processing time. Plus, they got to transmit all that data. And mostly it's for ads and tracking anyway. So, yeah, let's ban JavaScript for global warming. I'm on with this. Who do we talk to about this?
I don't know, but I'll get on it.
The World Trade Organization?
I'm down with this. Yeah, ban screw the SD versus HD video because that's the video compression is pretty good. JavaScript, let's get that banned.
Ban Java for global warming.
JavaScript. Java and JavaScript are not the same thing. I've only got one thing for you tonight in Digital Dojo, but this thing is interesting. OpenSecurityTraining.info. This page, they're trying to set up their own version of Khan Academy for security training. Now, it's kind of early days. They don't have a lot of in-depth stuff, but their basics are actually pretty good. Looking through some of these things in Introduction to Network Forensics, Security Arm, x86, this stuff's pretty much basics, but it's not bad. They get into a little bit of reverse engineering of malware. That's getting up there. Some virtualization, some different exploitation things. But there's a lot of stuff here. It's worth looking into if you're interested in this kind of stuff. And the training links aren't bad at all. So I thought that was interesting, and it's definitely worth digging into. Hit the JavaScript site, fans ramp up. Yeah. Yep, Rats is right in the IRC there. Running Ubuntu, everything ran fine. Hit the JavaScript site, fans ramp up to jet engine levels. He's not wrong. Actually, that's the amazing thing is, like, okay, we're all killing Flash and they're banning Flash. Flash was way more efficient than JavaScript. I'm just going to throw it out there. I don't think it was better, because there are all kinds of sandbox jailbreaks and security issues with Flash. But Flash ran better and was more efficient, and for the most part was smaller than a lot of the JavaScript of today. Convert to
power. Do you think JavaScript is just hanging on because of legacy hardware, or we haven't come up with a better replacement for it?
There are replacements for things like WebAssembly and Rust and HTML5 covers a lot of what JavaScript does, but JavaScript has some very popular libraries that let a lot of people do fancy things on their web pages. So it sticks around things like Node.js and things like that. But one of the reasons that JavaScript is popular is because it's one of the languages that's usually taught for web development. So it's kind of like Java in that Java is one of your standard university courses because it is. It's like, well, everybody uses Java, so we teach Java. Well, why does everybody use Java? Because Java is what's taught. JavaScript is kind of the same thing for websites. But the big thing they do with JavaScript in this day and age is load ads, do your user tracking, and do what's called responsive websites, where the layout is changing dynamically based on your screen size. Primarily, this is so that you don't have to rewrite your website so it looks okay on a cell phone versus on a desktop PC. But, yeah. Anybody who runs NoScript for a bit will figure out real quick just how heavy JavaScript can be. It's actually amazing. Back in the day when I first started loading NoScript and ad blockers onto machines, when JavaScript was starting to get really obnoxious, I would see battery life go up in my laptop because I was just not letting the JavaScript run. So, yeah, it's... I'd be down with getting JavaScript banned for global warming. It's climate change, right? I don't know the language anymore.
I don't know.
It's climate change now.
Okay.
Because we can't decide whether the Earth's getting warmer or colder, but the Earth is doing something. So change covers it all.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure we can get the 4chan guys on that, right?
Well, they can at least research what all was said. I mean, I don't know if you're going to get enough of them interested enough to do the math on what's actually happening, because there's not going to be any shoes involved, tits involved, and you're not going to piss anyone off. So that's like all of their motivation.
Oh, it'll piss a lot of people off, mostly the ad tracking companies.
Oh, you mean banning... Oh, yeah, you can get them to ban JavaScript. Yeah, no problem. I thought you meant actual research in global warming.
What? No, I want to come up with some fake-ass campaign that the media will run with because they love to try to get JavaScript banned for security. I want to ban for security reasons and the fact that it, you know, is crappy and bloated and slows websites down. But
well, I'm pretty sure Trump used JavaScript on all his machines that the administration used, so there's the reason.
I believe the Gorilla Channel exclusively used it for their programming.
There you go.
Oh, fuck.
Hell, I think the Gorilla Channel actually created some Java.
I would watch the Gorilla Fights channel. That'd be awesome.
Fuck yeah.
I still want to see a silverback and a grizzly bear go at it. I know the grizzly's going to win. I just want to see the fight.
All right. Of course, that's all I've got for today. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit. In the IRC tonight, myself, Sardonic, Cyberlord, Psychros, DPView, Heratz, Madman, and the Coffee Maker. Madman, closing thoughts.
I don't know if Apple did anything wrong by playing ball with the sheriff. I think they may be victims in that. Really weird to think of Apple as a victim. I wonder if they, you know, had them bend over or do anything weird.
I don't know what else to say to that. Are you closing thoughts?
I'm looking forward to unplugging. It's almost that time of the year to take a couple of weeks off and turn everything off and not give two fucks for a while.
Well, I tell you what, if there's no news stories next week, we may start the holiday break early. But
yeah, I'm just talking about myself, man. You know, it's almost that time of the year. Take 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
Don't do shit. Don't look at news. You know, not even turn on the desktop, man. Just get out of the fucking house and walk away for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that being a good thing. But in all seriousness, we probably, you know, we'll probably do a show next week, and then after that, we'll probably go on break until, what, second week of January, third week of January?
We'll yeah, see. It starts to ramp back up around then, and, you know.
I mean, unless you guys, unless you guys want, you know, election news, there's not really much to talk
Fuck,
about.
Fuck, I'm not doing that show, dude.
Yeah,
I'm doing enough off air.
You, if you want politics and election shit and mainstream stuff, go. There's like 100.
There's 100
man. Yeah. Go do that. So hell, half the stuff I'm trying to cover is though you know like it used to be niche, and it's not really niche anymore, but it used to be.
And we'll cover the voting machines if and when any evidence does fall into our lap that we can genuinely trust. There's no point talking about them right now because it's all pure speculation.
Or if we can find a voting machine on eBay for less than $100. In that case, I'll buy it just to play with it. okay, you know what, DPView? If something blows up and they redo Section 230, We'll talk. We'll do a show that we can come on it because that's worth talking
about.
That
would be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, apart from that, we can definitely take a break.
What is 230? Oh, Section 230 is the general legal provision that a website is not necessarily responsible for the content their users post. So
it actually started out as a protection for phone companies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's common. It's the common carrier protection, but it's been interpreted so broadly that basically no companies are responsible for any of this. The trick is that these companies aren't supposed to be practicing any editorial control. It's supposed to be purely removal of things that violate policies, but I'd love to see it actually play out where somebody says, "Well, your community guidelines aren't really a policy." And you've got it structured such that you can change them whenever you want, and especially since you only seem to be targeting certain political views, that you're practicing editorial. I don't want Section 230 removed. I would
just
like
want it used correctly.
I'd like to see them reinterpreted a bit and maybe interpreted a little bit more narrowly so that when you have some of these companies using it as kind of the defense for all of their ills, you know, you can't touch us for anything we take down because Section 230. No, that's not quite how that works. So I'd like to see their policies more rigorously defined and enforced. Like if YouTube can take a video down, I want to fucking know why they can take those videos down before I post anything. Otherwise, the only way to know if a video violates the rules is to upload it and see. And that's not a very fair way to play. You know, I don't want to see Section 230 removed. I just want to see it clarified to the point where they actually have to fucking tell you what they'll pull a video down for. Because, you know, right now that's the big joke. If you don't know what a channel's gonna get, you know, pulled for, if you're trying to run a channel, what you're going to get demonetized over. It's like, no, you should have to lay that out in black and white. That should be a series of, you know, a document's going to be fucking huge, but that's fine. It should be there so that somebody at least has the opportunity to check and see if what they're about to do is going to violate a rule, but they don't. So, but yeah, definitely if they put out, if Section 230 gets attention, we'll come on and talk about it. Maybe not a Christmas show, but any other week. So, anyways, that's all I've got. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. I've already done the closing. I read the IRC. We did closing thoughts. Is that it? Is it sound effect time?
Sound effect time.
Sound effect time.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Hawk, hawk.
I am an adult actress, and my keyboard is
I need to take that one off the soundboard. Why do I keep hitting that one?
Yeah, get that one off.
Shut up, Wesley.